on land use. We are meeting in the Medford City Hall Council Chambers here in Medford, Oregon this evening. And the legislature and this committee express their sincere thanks to the city of Medford and the council for use of these chambers. And I'd like to acknowledge Key Strasser, who is here tonight. Thank you, Key, very much. We appreciate the courtesies. We'll pretty well stick to schedule committee. We also have a few guests with the committee tonight, so I thought it might be a good idea before we go into work session to go around the table and have each legislator introduce themselves, and if they care to make a statement, we'd be happy to accept it. So I'll start to my right with Representative Buckley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Peter Buckley. I represent House District 5, which is Ashland, Talent, Phoenix, Jacksonville, and a small slice of West Medford. I'm very honored to be able to welcome my fellow representatives here tonight, as well as Senator Wissett as well. And I'm glad to see everyone here to discuss the issues that we're facing with the Measure 37 and other land use issues in our state. Thanks for being here, and welcome to my colleagues. Should I repeat everything again? Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Max Sumner, representative from Molalla, Silverton, Mount Angel. I'm a freshman this year and glad to be here. Well, I thank you for your welcome to your beautiful city. Thank you so much.
I'm Bob Ackerman, state representative from House District 13, which is North Eugene. And I, of course, am on the House Land Use Committee. This is my second term on this committee, and I'm starting my third term as a legislator in Salem.
Hi, I'm State Representative Mitch Greenlick, House District 33, which is northwest Portland, all the way west to the wine country of western Washington County. And I'm vice chair of the one of the two vice chairs of the committee, my second year on the committee. I'm very happy to serve with our esteemed chair.
I'm Sam Litke. I'm the only non-politician at the table. I'm the committee administrator who, along with my assistant, Lindsay, we take care of putting all the paperwork and making sure the flow of paperwork hopefully proceeds as it should.
I'm State Representative Gordon Anderson. I'm in District 3, which is essentially parts of Josephine County with Grants Pass and Cave Junction. It's always a pleasure to come over Mount Sexton and see the beautiful valley and over Blackwell Hill and see Mount McLaughlin. This is just gorgeous country, and you people know how to live.
Thank you. I'm State Representative Patty Smith. I'm in my third term. I represent East Clackamas, Hood River County, and Multnomah County. I happen to live in Corbett, Pioneer Family. I'm a farmer. I'm in my third term, and I'm very proud to be on this committee, and I love it down here. This is truly God's country, so thank you very much.
Fair country.
Hello, everyone, all my neighbors. I'm Dennis Richardson. This is my country. I'm so grateful to be home, and I just got here. And the weather is much better here than it is up north. And my district is between Representative Anderson and Representative Esquivel's from northwest Medford across the Rogue Valley to areas north and then east and south of Grants Pass.
I'm Sal Esquivel. I'm your representative from Medford. And this is my hometown. Welcome, Mr. Chair and the committee. And you don't have to tell us it's a beautiful place to be and a beautiful place to live. That's why we live here.
I'm Senator Doug Whitsett. I represent Senate District 28, which includes Crook Lake, Klamath, part of Deschutes, and that part of Jackson County, essentially east of Highway 62. Really pleased to be here this evening. Really pleased to see this kind of a turnout in our Commerce Committee meeting last night in Eugene. In the city the size of Eugene, we only had about 20 people, and it looks like there must be at least 100 here. So I'm really looking forward to hearing what you have to say to the committee. Thank you.
And I am State Representative Bill Garrard from District 56, which is Clinal Falls. I'm in my third term in the legislature and my second session as chair of the Land Use Committee. For the benefit of the audience, we do have guest members that are here, but the members who will be voting this evening on any bills will be Representative Anderson, Greenlick, Ackerman, Smith, and Summer. Those will be the representatives that are the normal members of this committee that will be voting, but all of our guests will be requested to participate in any questions and answers as we go along this evening. We have two pieces of business to take care of before we get to the discussion of Measure 37, but we do welcome you all and appreciate your being here. We will now open a quick work session on House Bill 2484, and I'm going to ask Don Phillips, Sam, and let the audience know what this is all about.
Yes, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2484 is one that will require a majority of votes in an area of where the city proposes to annex territory. That would be essentially a double majority. That would be currently the state law requires that if the city wants to annex an entire or big portion of an urban growth boundary, that under OSR 195, that would be a simple majority of the residents of the city and then the residents of the area to be proposed. This proposed bill would replace that and require a double majority, a majority of the city residents and a majority of the people who currently or live in the area proposed for annexation.
The committee has had a previous public hearing on this bill, and the chair asked for a task force to take a look at the bill and to come back to the committee with a report to see whether we could find agreement on some of the more contentious elements of the bill. Representative Jerry Crummel from Wilsonville was asked to chair that group, and we have his assistant here tonight in place of Jerry giving us the results and the report by the task force. So, Ms. Phillips.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, and thank you all for bringing your expertise and your work out to the community. I think that's a great service. My name is Don Phillips. I'm Chief of Staff for State Representative Jerry Crummel, House District 26, which is Wilsonville, Sherwood, and parts in between. Representative Crummel did chair the work group that looked into House Bill 2484 and any suggested changes that might be out there. They met for several hours, and you have a letter that's been distributed this evening and I believe was distributed yesterday as well, giving you the results of that work group. Basically, to sum up, the work group met and discussed all these issues. The consensus was that House Bill 2484 should move to the floor with a due pass recommendations, and there were no amendments suggested from the work group.
Any questions from the committee of Ms. Phillips?
Mr. Chair, I do just want to put in the record the note in the letter on this that I was not able to attend that meeting and that the amendments that I am interested in 2484 weren't able to be discussed at that time.
Right. And for that reason, we committee members will not. We are going to accept a -7 amendment to the bill, but we will not move the bill out tonight. So, any other questions, Ms. Phillips? Seeing none, thank you, Ms. Phillips.
Thank you all.
Can you turn up the volume?
I think we're getting a little feedback.
Thank you very much. I should have asked that. Can everybody hear us okay? Well, some of you will probably benefit from that.
Do we do the introductions over again?
No, there's a lady over here that said she can hear every word and she'll trade seats with you. Is that better? Can the group behind us, can you hear us okay?
Okay, great. Maybe turn it up just a little more.
But close to me, the mics.
Okay. Geez, like the old radio days. Can you hear us now? Okay. Representative Ackerman, you have a -7 amendment to this bill.
I do, Mr. Chairman. I do want to make an inquiry, though. I don't think you've called us in work session, have you?
Yes, I think.
Yeah, okay. I want to make sure I'm on the right page. Thank you very much.
Do you have the second?
Yes,
you should have been provided with a dash 7.
All committee members should have a copy of the dash 7 amendments.
I've got one, and
okay.
I've got ones, tens, and 11s in my package.
Just for the audience's edification, the amendment is 51 pages long.
Hmm.
I'm not going to require the committee members to read the 51 pages, but I'm hoping that Representative Ackerman will give us the quick Reader's Digest version.
And for the record, I will move that the dash 7 amendments to House Bill 2484 be incorporated within the main bill, and then I'd like to discuss the amendment, please.
Discuss.
As you know, the House bill that's before us requires a double majority before annexation can be completed. This is a substantial change in state law. In Lane County, we have the only state-sanctioned, state-chartered boundary commission for some reason. That commission has the authority to annex property without a vote of the people. And in order to be consistent with House Bill 2484, the dash 7 amendments I'm sponsoring would repeal that authority. So in other words, the Lane County Boundary Commission would no longer have the authority to annex properties without the consent of the voters. And for that reason and for reasons of consistency, I believe that the dash 7 amendments should be adopted by this committee. Thank you.
Is there any discussion of Representative Ackerman's amendment to dash 7?
Sure.
Representative Greenlee.
Can I just ask Representative Ackerman? These whole set of statutes that are amended in the dash 7s only relate to the Lane County Boundary Commission?
Yes, that's correct.
Even the ones in Section 222?
I'm not familiar with that. I'd have to look at that section. I'm not sure. I can say that in my discussions with legislative counsel on this, we had to go to two drafts in order to get it correct. I don't know why there are cross references here that are being amended. My request to legislative counsel was just merely to repeal their authority, the Boundary Commission's authority to conduct annexations without a vote. It does repeal their authority to annex, so there may be cross references to other annexation statutes which they operate under. That would be my best explanation.
Is Representative Greenlick have any further questions, or would
can
you
I
like
have a sort of parliamentary inquiry? We're not going to act on the final bill today, just on these amendments.
Correct.
When we come back into consideration of the bill in another work session, if there was something in here we decided we wanted to change, we would change that with another set of amendments.
That's correct. Yes.
Thank you, sir.
And I might say, Representative Greenlick and Mr. Chairman, if it's necessary for legislative counsel to come down and explain this, I'd be happy to accommodate you on that request. I just thought they could repeal a couple of statutes, but when they got through with it, we had a 52-page amendment, and I can't totally explain everything that's here, but I think we could have a reconsideration. I'd be happy to do that when we reconsider the bill.
Representative Greenlee, do you have a problem with voting on the dash 7 amendment?
I don't, sir.
Okay. Is there any further discussion? Representative Anderson.
Yes, just in terms of process, I would prefer having some time. 52 pages is difficult to digest in 2 minutes. Do we need to move the dash 7 now in order to have discussion, or?
I've made the motion.
No, he did make a motion, yes.
Right. Okay. Well, could I follow that? One other question. Are the dash 1 through 6 incorporated in the dash 7?
No.
No, dash 7 is dash 7. Representative Buckley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a point of information. I'm a member of the General Government Committee. We had a bill before us this week concerning the Lane County Boundary Commission. Representatives Holby, Beyer, and Farr all testified on behalf of the Boundary Commission, keeping its authority as it exists now, and I would simply recommend alerting those representatives to this amendment.
Chair.
Representative Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to join Representative Anderson. I don't feel comfortable voting on this evening without having read it, so I think I would ask that the good representative withdraw his motion to adopt the Dash 7s, and let's pursue this further.
Okay, I'll be willing to do that, Representative, and we can do it at another work session, and I'll have Legislative Council present.
That would be great. Thank you.
Okay. Representative Ackerman withdraws his motion to add the Dash 7s to House Bill 2484. Is there any further discussion? We'll put this bill, Sam, put this bill back up for Wednesday, and hopefully at that time we'll have enough time to do the full discussions on it. So we'll close the work session on House Bill 2484, open a work session on House Bill 2705. Committee, this is a bill that we heard just a couple days ago. It has a Dash 4 amendment, and Representative Richardson somehow miraculously walked in tonight with those Dash 4. So, Representative Richardson.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the amendments that we're looking at now, the Dash 4 amendments, are very similar to ones that were recommended by Representative Nolan, which were the Dash 3 amendments, except that they removed one sentence which changed the meaning of what was intended by her request. The Dash 4 amendments, basically, because we have people that don't necessarily know what this bill deals with, by way of quick review, this bill addresses a problem of rural homeowners that have failing septic systems and failing drain fields, and where they have three or more clustered close together, it would give them the opportunity to create their own small community sewer system. The Dash 4 amendments provide for a couple of areas that weren't in the original bill. One is that it says that the community sewer system, of course, must be approved by the Environmental Quality Commission, the DEQ, the Department of Environmental Quality. It also sets forth that if this cluster happens to be within 300 feet of an existing sewer system, that they would first be required to seek to be connected to the existing system rather than automatically have their own. If they are declined their petition to join an existing system, then they would be able to go ahead and form their own community sewer system. It goes on to say that if there's a dwelling that is lawfully constructed after the date that this law takes effect, then that dwelling could be connected to the community sewer system that's established under the terms of this law if, one, the dwelling could lawfully have been constructed on the date that this bill became law, and then secondly, it's within the community sewer system area. And so it's just kind of providing for that to take place. It's important for the record to note that this is not a Measure 37 bill. This bill is not intended to either promote or hinder Measure 37. It merely is to solve an environmental and a property owner's problem, and that is that when you have failing septic systems, it affects the buyer, the environment, and it affects the property owners, and it's supposed to solve that. And if there's Measure 37 issues that affect this in the future, they'll be dealt with under other Measure 37 laws and interpretations, but that this is not intended to be an interpreting statute for Measure 37.
Any questions of Representative Greenman?
Mr. Chair,
Representative Greenman.
Thank you, sir. I did hear from the consensus group that there was one sentence wrong in the Dash 3s, Representative Richardson. Was that first sentence in the Dash 3 under Item 3 that says a community sewer system may not be extended to serve an additional area?
That is correct. That is the only difference between the Dash 3 amendments and Dash 4 is the removal of that system.
And that wasn't the part of the agreement that, if I may continue, that the the wording now is 3A, 3A and 3B now cover that. Is that, I mean.
Mr. Chair, Representative Greenock, I'm not sure I understand the question.
The concept I think I'm reading 3A and 3B correctly, is that we had a discussion about existing versus new construction in when we talked about it, and 3A and 3B talk about adding new construction, but basically adding it inside the area of the existing. So that question is taken care of by the way 3A and 3B are phrased, I think. Is that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Greenlick, I believe that is correct. We got a call from Dave Honeycutt, who had reviewed these, and he said he's got a problem with that one sentence because it went beyond, in his opinion, what Representative Nolan and everyone had agreed to, and that if we remove that one sentence, then what is left there does accomplish what you had discussed. And so this was about 1 o'clock today, and so I contacted the Legislative Council, and they were able to accommodate this amendment in a very short amount of time, but the only change is the removal of that one sentence.
If I may, Mr. Chair, I did just want to put on the record that the intent in this case for new construction wasn't to allow the sewer system to be extended beyond into new areas, if you will, but to allow it to serve, once it had been constructed, new dwelling within its existing area. Thank you, sir.
Any further questions? Representative Ackerman.
Yes, this arises out of our last meeting when we had a dialogue with Mr. Honeycutt as to whether the dwellings that would be clustered would be pre-existing or not, and I believe he did concede that they would be pre-existing with the exception of the dwellings mentioned in the Dash 4 amendment. However, there has not been tendered an amendment to Section 1 that limit the initial clustering of these dwellings to pre-existing dwellings. I just want to call that to your attention. I thought that was going to be done.
It was discussed in the committee meeting, as I recall.
I remember we discussed the conceptual amendment. I thought Mr. Honeycutt was going to incorporate that within the Dash 4, so I'm just saying that we may not be totally complete yet, but we're getting there.
Representative Richardson, do you have any response to that question? I think Representative Rackerman has raised a valid question.
Mr. Chair, Representative Ackerman, I was not a party to the prior hearings, and so I'm not familiar with what took place there.
Right. The Dash 4 amendment would allow another dwelling within the coverage area of the community service system, and we were going to restrict new dwellings to that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Ackerman, I could mention that it does say that if there was to be a new constructed dwelling, that would only be allowed if that dwelling could be constructed now, not sometime in the future. And it does say a dwelling, it could only be allowed to be connected to the community sewer system if the dwelling could have been lawfully constructed under the zoning in effect on the effective date of this law.
Yes, I'm satisfied with that.
Okay.
But my point is that was the only exception for a new dwelling to constitute the cluster. And I think Section 1 has to be readdressed when we convene again.
We do have a Dash 2 amendment, which I don't think you have a copy of, but addresses the very issue
of
the one word.
That.
So what we can do here is move the Dash 2 and then the Dash 4.
That takes care of my concern. Thank you. I hadn't seen that amendment.
The chair would look for a motion on the Dash 2 amendment.
Mr. Chair, I move we add the Dash 2 amendments to House Bill 2705.
Representative Greenlick has moved the Dash 2 amendments to House Bill 2705. Is there any objection? Seeing none, the Dash 2 amendments are moved to 2705. Representative Greenlick.
Mr. Chair, I move we add the Dash 4 amendments to House Bill 2705.
Representative Greenlick has moved the Dash 4 amendments to House Bill 2705 as amended. Any further discussion? Representative Anderson.
Some of this bothers me a little bit in that I think we're being too restrictive. It appears to me that may need some direction on this, that should a Measure 37 development occur next to two older properties, say, or three older properties that are going to use this, that that would not be able to be added onto the present bill. We have new technology that really can make the treatment of sewage much more effective, much more cost-effective, and this would seem to be saying we're not interested in new technology, we're not interested in doing things in the most cost-effective way, we're just limiting this totally. So I think probably I would vote in opposition to changing it in that sense, unless you can explain that would be a
representative exclusion.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, the intention is not at all to restrict technology, only to restrict unexpected expansion of the community sewer system. My understanding from conversations with Mr. Honeycutt was that these amendments were agreed to by him in negotiations with Representative Nolan in the hope that there could be unanimous committee acceptance of this. He knows it's restricted as far as what it could be. He'd love to have it be open to whoever might want to join and might qualify, but in his hope that this would actually not get stopped halfway through the process but would be able to be successful through both the House and the Senate and be signed into law, it was agreed that maybe we would go ahead and restrict it because sometimes a sandwich is better than a whole meal if you don't get anything.
Any further discussion on the -4 amendments? Is there any objection to moving the -? Have we had a motion?
Yes.
So we have had a motion to move the -4 amendments into House Bill 2705. Is there anyone in disagreement?
I'm in disagreement, but I will vote to or allow the amendment to be added. And more than likely would move this to the floor, but I might at that time vote against it.
Okay. Fair enough. Seeing no one opposed, the -4 is there moved into House Bill 2705 as amended. Representative Greenlee.
Mr. Chair, I move -2705 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Greenlee has moved House Bill 2705 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. The clerk will call the roll.
Aye.
Representative Anderson?
Aye.
Representative
Aye.
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 Chair votes aye. House Bill 2705, as amended, is moved to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Thank you, committee members. Representative Richardson, would you like to carry this bill?
I would be honored to. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair, with your leave, I'd like to be able to be dismissed so that I could go over to a Ways and Means meeting that's also being held in the city.
We appreciate your attendance this evening and your messenger service, particularly, and the power you must have over legislative counsel. So.
Also a very good messenger, I would say.
We are now going to open a public hearing on ballot measure 37. We have so far 27 people who wish to speak to the committee. And this is the primary reason that we are here. Just to give you a quick background legislatively as to what has happened with Measure 37 that hasn't been in the newspapers or on the radio or TV. The House Land Use Committee, this committee in front of you right now, has 18 bills before it that are either directly or indirectly related to ballot Measure 37. Given the complexity of the issue, combined with the desire of the Senate Environment and Land Use Committee to take the lead in crafting a fix to identified problems within the measure, the House Land Use Committee has proceeded slowly, in part waiting for a Senate bill to be sent to the House side for review. However, we have now scheduled at the end of this month a number of these bills for public hearing, And this committee will begin to review and to formulate an omnibus bill for any changes to Measure 37 if necessary. During committee discussion, members felt that there may be issues such as transfer of waivers, uniformity of claim filing process, what type of legal review for challenges, protecting jurisdictions from legal actions resulting from ballot Measure 37 decisions. And the committee has so far in the legislative session moved out a lot of record bill and also has before it a secondary lands bill. Senator Ringo, who is chair of the Senate Land Use Committee, formed a work group that met a number of times starting in late February and continuing off and on until early this month. A subgroup of this work group started meeting independently of the entire group. This group was limited to main principals who were Dave Honeycutt, the director of Oregonians in Action, Lane Shetterly, director of LCDC, Senator Ringo, and myself, resulted in the crafting of Senate Bill 1037. This bill is considered an omnibus bill and has numerous facets to it. We wanted to let you know what was in 1037 and that in the legislative process, once the Senate has completed a bill, then it must move to the House, and we would assume it's a land use issue, it will come to this committee. We do not have a finished product from the Senate yet, but we do have the makings of one. And I'd like to review very quickly some of the highlights that are in 1037, just in case this evening, during your testimony, you'd like to comment on any of the provisions. Those are the things this committee is looking for. Briefly, the bill will divide farmland into three categories. And the category of farmland identified as high value would be preserved, and there would be no 37 claims allowed. The lands zoned EFU would be categorized as non-high value and non-resource, with each allowing ballot measure 37 claims, and each would allow for greater opportunities to divide property. What to do with forest lands is still unresolved. A complicated process is being worked on also in urban fringe lands. There is, as I mentioned earlier, a tract of record provision that is in Senate Bill 1037, which is very similar to Representative Richardson's lot of record bill, House Bill 2549A. The omnibus bill also includes a clarified claims filing process. To date, the bill has had one hearing and is not scheduled for any further consideration. If that continues to hold true, then any changes to Measure 37 will originate in this committee before you now. Your testimony this evening is important. That's why we're here. We wanted to run a couple bills by you first just to see how we operate. And so you kind of, you know, like in the book where you got to name all the characters, well, you all kind of have a feeling who we are at this point. So now we get down to the nitty-gritty. We want to know, did you vote for 37? Did you not vote? That's if you care to tell us. Is it working for you? Do you think it's doing what you intended to do? And if you were going to change it, what would you change? So we have at this point 27 people. We have approximately an hour and a half. So we'll ask you to hold your testimony to approximately 2 minutes, right around in there. I realize that's a burden because this is a complicated issue. But in order to get everybody heard, unfortunately, we have to do it that way. So we'll start. Normally, we call people who are over 100 miles away. We don't have anybody on the list from over 100 miles, so we're just going to start with list number one, and we'll have you come forward in groups of three, and we will refer to those groups as panels. So I'd like the first panel to come forward, which will be Randy Shaw, Robert Daggett, and Judson Parsons. And you're going to have to play tag with the microphone. Sorry about that part. Proceed. Mr. Shaw, proceed.
My name's Randy Shaw, and I'm here representing Klamath County Association of Realtors, but I'm also here as a private citizen and born and raised individual from Klamath County, Klamath Falls, Oregon. Mr. Chairman, thank you very much for your consideration to allow me to speak, and I want to thank all the committee for being here. I'm here to tell a story. It's called the Turner story. And this story it's come to me in different ways, six different times by different landowners. I voted yes on Measure 37. The individuals I'm referring to also voted yes on 37. The Turner story has to do with the farmer who owns a considerable amount of acreage, probably around 600 acres. He has a variety of land involved in this farm. Some of it very good land. Some of it not so good land. Some of it horrible land. All zoned EFU. Now, Mr. Turner has to support his farm based on making a living on all these acres. Pretty difficult to do that when only about 200 of them are really productive. He looks at ballot measure 37 as an opportunity not for himself, but for his children. This is not a corporate monster that intends to create one-acre, half-acre plots on his property. This is a gentleman whose family has owned this land for four generations, looking to do something for his kids down the road. Does he want to see this land become one-acre parcels? No. No, his heart's in the right place. And so are all the people that I've dealt with so far in Klamath County. They're looking at 20-acre parcels, possibly, 10-acre parcels mainly, and they're really confused with the system. They're getting signals in the newspaper from the Attorney General, from everybody saying, this can't be done, you can't do this, you can't do that. You know, I feel sorry for Mr. Turner, and I feel sorry for the other individuals that I've had the opportunity to meet with who have requested me to look at their land and say to them, I don't know everything that needs to be known here. You probably better get an attorney, because I don't quite understand where we stand here either. That's my story. Now, my opinion is that the major problem we have is the transferability of this particular property that gets put into whatever stage it gets put into. My answer to that in relation to Mr. Turner and the other people that I have met with is that it's made a zone change. This is not a waiver. This is a modification of the Goal 5. So if we do this as a zone change, it goes through the Planning Commission, it goes through the system, the county gets funds for the hearings, all these things happen, and then we have a viable piece of property. The people apply for it under whatever zone they feel is appropriate for that piece of property. These are foothill properties, juniper, sagebrush, rocks, ground squirrels, things like that. These are not properties that are high productive lands. Klamath County has a very high percentage of this type of inventory. We're a foothill place. A couple of things I see happening here is we're sitting here putting water, which is a very viable resource that we have very little of in Klamath County right now, on this land because it's an irrigated acre. Why are we doing this? It doesn't make any sense to me. Where we should be putting the water is on the high productive lands, not on these foothill properties that are broad brush zoned as EFU zones. That's probably, to me, one of the most frustrating situations that we've gotten into in Klamath County. And I know that there are a number of families out there that are waiting to see what the state's going to do about this whole thing because they'd like to move forward with their lives. Thank you for letting me speak.
Mr. Daggett.
Hi, my name's Robert, Mr. Chairman. My name's Robert Daggett. I'm Klamath County Association of Realtors Government Affairs Chairman. I've also been on Klamath County Planning Commission for the last 10 years. Thank you for the opportunity to speak on this. It impacts us as realtors. We're on the front lines here, and we don't have answers. And I'm a land specialist, land, farm, ranch specialist, and no one wants to see in Klamath County, to my knowledge, valuable resource lands abused or developed into high density. We don't want to see those. As a planner, I don't want to see them taken out of our inventory. But on the other hand, Klamath County, as Randy spoke out, is a large collection of conflicting zones. We have EFU crop grazing, EFU crop. As you talked earlier, there should be some better zones for soil types in our county. What we have there is unfarmable foothill ground that has been miszoned as EFU, even though it has no EFU value. We also have that in our timberlands. We used to have a timber forestry range zone. And that usually consists of a lot of its juniper, rock, and grasslands. And all of these under Measure 37 should have the ability for the old farm families or should have the ability to be turned into a rezoned either as non-resource or residential ability under Measure 37. What we're concerned with is transferability of these properties. If we don't do something through a system like a rezone, with all its protections that a rezone has, you know, you'd still fall underneath all the land use laws, health and safety issues that we deal with on a daily basis as planners. There's no guarantee that these properties can be transferred to their children or to prospective buyers or retirement. A lot of these farmers have nothing to retire on. If they could break off 10, 20 acres of their hill country, sell it, they might have a retirement. And that's kind of what we're shooting for. And we need to guarantee these changes so county planning staff, and we've all ran into it, cannot make or change policy because they disagree with it. So we need a policy that guarantees these individuals' rights that can't be taken away by some planner just because they don't agree. And also, I'm in full support of House Bill 2549, and thank you for passing it. I think that was a wonderful bill. And that's about it. It's good job, and I'm really happy to be here.
Thank you for being here. Committee, we'll wait till the entire panel has spoken, and then if you have any questions. Mr. Parsons.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Judson Parsons. I personally own farm and forest land in Jackson County and also Marion County. And I also manage for an extended family, cousins and siblings, 2,200 acres of forest land in Jackson County. I voted against Measure 37, but now it's law, and compensation was an important part of Measure 37. And as I understand it, any bills related to new taxes have to originate in the House. And as yet, I have not heard very much discussion about how we might provide compensation. I don't think it would all have to be public money, new taxes. Some of it could be private money, contributions, land trusts, etc. And I've heard that the United States Department of Agriculture a couple of years ago authorized to help share purchase of ag land conservation easements through the local soil and water conservation districts. So I think you should seriously look at some ways of providing compensation. Thank you.
Committee, any questions of this panel? Senator Whitsitt.
Chair Gerard, Mr. Shaw, could you just comment briefly on the negative impacts on the value of marginal EFU lands of mule deer overlays for habitat and give us your recommendations, if any?
Now, explain that just a little bit further for me. The impacts of?
Mule deer habitat overlays that prevent division of lands.
Yeah, there's one case that I know of that's been filed with the county commissioners now, and that is based on a removal of that wildlife or actually mule deer winter range overlay in a non-resource zone that has 20 acre minimums. I think that there is some validity to that situation right there as far as the mule deer migrations and what's going on with the mule deer populations in Oregon. What the impact of that overlay has to do with the rest of the land, there's definitely an impact there in the fact that you've got lands that are right outside of town, just right outside the urban growth boundary, that are affected by the overlay. What kind of a dollar value you put on that, I don't know, and I really question the fact that a lot of people are looking for a dollar value to come back to them. I think that a lot of people are just looking to do what they'd like to be able to do with their land. I don't think that they're looking for a large amount of money to come their way. First three claims that were heard by the county commissioners in Klamath County, they didn't even have a dollar value to them. The people didn't care about the money. It was what they wanted to be able to do with their land. And so that to me speaks quite a bit about what people are trying to say to the people that are representing them. They're trying to say, this is our land. We'd like to have my daughter live down the road here from me. And right now she can't do that because I can't do this with my land. And the overlay has a lot to do with that.
Thank you, Mr. Shaw.
Any further questions? Gentlemen, thank you very much for being here. Helen Garner, Karen Carpenter, Edward Carpenter. At least we got two mics now, so it's a little better.
Well,
you need to,
we're going to be very brief.
You need to state your name.
Karen Carpenter, Eagle Point, Oregon. Thank you for coming, gentlemen. I just wanted to say that I voted for Measure 37, and I don't believe it should be tinkered with. Although I would say that things that Dave Honeycutt comes up with are very good, so I do trust him. And the previous panel, I can sympathize with their positions. The EFU is a mess in Oregon. They painted with a broad brush, and they never should have done that. Thank you.
Helen Garner.
No muscle. I am Helen Garner, and the Garner family wants to thank you for this opportunity to speak with you regarding Measure 37. And we want to thank you all for your participation here in Medford. May I read this?
Sir, depends on how long it is.
Okay, I'll hurry.
Are you a good reader?
I am.
Then proceed.
First, my family, in 1957, the Garner family invested everything they had in 240 acres, which is just 6 miles from downtown Medford. My husband, Gene Garner, with a partner, developed a small subdivision in Butte Falls in the 1960s. In the meantime, we sold a few small home sites ranging from 3 to 5 acres out of our Medford 240 acres. In 1972, we were finally able to build our home. Then came the biggest blow of our life. 1973 statewide zoning. Well, that was the demise of the Garner family dream, with my husband being a real estate developer, we were literally put out of business. Our business was destroyed. Just this morning, in writing this, I was thinking back to when we first came to Medford. Those were the good old days when neighbors helped neighbors. Some family names came to my mind, like Mr. Tom Whittle, Mr. Doug Plumley, and yes, even my husband, Gene Garner, who took pride and joy in working with young people and others to help them realize the American dream of owning their own home. There's a word for that, charity, and it has a nice ring to it. Statewide zoning has been nothing but a disservice to all. It put everyone in harm's way. And that was a very sad, sad day. The Garner family has waited 32 years with no return, no interest, no nothing on our investment. During zoning, we had to sell up to 85 acres for one house because of EFU zoning. And that was a great loss to us. Now, Measure 37, I said that it was a sad, sad day when zoning came in. Well, Measure 37 is a win-win-win situation. It's given me hope, and it's returned me my faith in our justice system. It has assured me that the American way of life still holds true and that our heritage still exists, that our old traditions still apply, that my children and grandchildren are entitled to their inheritance and that they have the right to do what they choose. I feel that family trust should not even be a factor in Measure 37. I commend the county commissioners for their standing there on their ground that Measure 37 goes with the land. Equity is in the land, not people. I have read about many claims throughout the state everywhere that have been approved and approved without restrictions. I have not heard of any being disapproved. Measure 37 has established its record, already being a successful tool in righting a terrible case of misjustice. I am so grateful for our Jackson County commissioners and Oregonians in Action. I wholeheartedly support them. Measure 37 was way overdue. Now it's time for our legislators to step up. In closing, I wish to leave with you a quote. From my husband, Gene Garner, which he said many, many times to me. Jackson County commissioners never cease to amaze me at what a great job they do, unquote. And I stand firm on this. Thank you.
Mrs. Garner, thank you. That was very eloquent, and you did a very beautiful job.
Did I go over 2 minutes?
Who cares?
I did, thank you.
Who cares if you did?
Mrs. Garner, sometimes the chair can be very mean, but he was nice tonight.
Hey, my name is Edward Carpenter. I'm from Eagle Point, and I voted for 37, and I think it's a great bill. I think I've seen so much. I work in the aggregate industry. I have seen so many times property rezoned, aggregate resources, and then be denied to go ahead and mine the rock. And our state, Southern Oregon especially, needs every bit of it they can get for all the building that goes on. And that's what I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you. Does the committee have any questions for any members of the panel? Representative Greenwood.
We're being very reluctant to ask questions because we really don't want to take up your time today with us. But I'd like to ask Ms. Gardner a question. You said we should leave Measure 37 untouched, and there's a fair belief that leaving it untouched leaves a lot of uncertainty, will cloud titles and a variety of things. And the chair, for example, is working very hard to try and put statutes in place that make some of the vagaries of Measure 37 work. I'm sure you wouldn't want us to stop doing that and just leave the situation as it is.
As I said, I trust Dave Honeycutt. And if you're working with him, if he's for it, I would be for it. But you need to tread lightly.
Thank you.
People in Southern Oregon like Measure 37. Nobody's asking for any money.
Representative Anderson.
Just a short comment. I appreciate your comments, Mr. Carpenter. We cannot get pea gravel in the county of Josephine. And I don't know when we're going to run up against a brick wall where we don't have the aggregate to build the highways we need to keep them up or the bridges. So it is a problem.
All right, thank you. We spent a lot of time in the last session on aggregate and trying to respond to the lawsuit that started most of that. That was just up the road in Roseburg. There are negotiations going on in regard to settling a lot of those issues, and hopefully they will be coming to the legislature very shortly. So hang in there.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for the work you're doing. Sal, you too.
You too, Sal?
You vote on that?
Frank Goodson, Jim Frick, and Bill Ryan, please come forward. Good evening. Mr. Goodson, you want to start things off?
Be happy to. Thank you, Chairman Girard, Senator Whitsitt, and committee members for being here and allowing us to talk. My name is Frank Goodson, living in up near Fort Klamath in Klamath County. I'm representing tonight the Klamath County Chamber of Commerce, the Committee for Healthy Klamath Economy, and the Klamath County Home Builders Association. Some of you may or may not heard, I know at least two of the legislators here tonight know that Klamath County's economy is booming right now, probably better than it ever has since before World War II. It has taken off, and it is doing it because I think it really started with Jeldwin and the Running Y Ranch and another subsequent development of properties in the area. People have found Klamath County, and they've found that our foothill lands with very poor soils have wonderful views of the lake, best views in Oregon, we call them. And Measure 37...
I'm charging you for commercial time here at a moment.
Okay, right. So I get another 2 minutes now? So I definitely voted for Measure 37. As did 75% of all the voters in Klamath County who voted, and that's the highest of any county approval of Measure 37. And the people would like to see it in place, or if any substitutes are made, that they be just as good as what the Measure 37 was intended. We were elated when the measure passed, but it only took a few days before we heard the governor's interpretation that lands may not be transferable. And I think that's a ruse, and it was done so it would force legislative action. Strategically, I don't blame the governor, I suppose, but I don't think it's right. On your SB 1037, certainly strongly recommend that whatever changes you made, that you make, that the end result be just as good as the intent of Measure 37. If you proceed, and I'm sure you will have to, to look at forest range lands, Klamath County's lands, as was described earlier. A lot of them are zoned besides EFU forest range. And our forest range lands can be lands with no forest whatsoever, but they have the name forest tied to them. And I know that the compromises being considered in 1037 haven't gotten to the forestry discussion yet. But in Klamath County and most of eastern Oregon, class 5 and 6 forest lands and worse are mostly put in forest range lands. And I would strongly recommend that lands that are class 5 and 6 and worse lands than that are otherwise classified as forest range, be put in the secondary lands, open up for more development. Klamath County's last greatest resource is probably its secondary lands, and it's mostly the hill lands that have no value for real grazing, have no value for real forestry, but they have wonderful views. And you've also heard that Klamath County has had very difficult times with its other resources in times past, forestry and farming. So don't take this our last best resource away accidentally or on purpose, please. Thank you.
Mr. Frick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to thank the committee for coming to Medford here and hearing our testimony. My name is Jim Frick. I've been in the real estate business for 28 years in southwestern Oregon, primarily out of the Illinois Valley. And I've seen the tragedy that's happened to our farmers, our loggers, and the people that have been under the rules and regulations of forest commercial zone lands and woodlot resource zone lands. I think my biggest concern is whatever you do with Measure 37, that it become a transferability issue. Because if you cannot transfer to a new owner whatever decision that you've made, it's a moot point. And I think the voters of Oregon spoke loud and clear when they came back in full force and supported Measure 37 the way that they did, and that's why we're here before you tonight. I also know, being a real estate broker, some of the hardships like Mrs. Garner was talking about, because I've seen ranchers and farmers that had their lands placed in 1973 under EFU zone, and that was a what I call down zone from their RR5 that they originally had and placed into exclusive farm use zone. That took them from having a 5-acre home site that they could have passed on to their child as a legal lot of record in that parcel, and it created them having one home site on 80 acres. Also, on the economics of that, as we've all seen in southwestern Oregon, in particular Josephine County, where 73% of the land is non-taxable, it's either federally or state-controlled, we too, like Klamath County, our last resource that we have right now is home ownership and these people that are coming here, and we need taxpayers in Josephine County to make up for what the losses are that the government is not giving us on ONC loss funds. And if we do not look at that issue, we have 18 counties in the state of Oregon that are under critical financial dynamic over this. So I plead with you to do the type of tweaking that you need to on 37 that will allow for legal lot of record like you guys passed and home ownership in the state of Oregon, just like other states around us are allowing, like Idaho. And I think that we could be a model to not overdevelop, but to use common sense approach in our future development. I thank you for being here tonight.
Mr. Ryan.
Yes, I want to thank you for holding this hearing down here. I think this is first, as far as I know. Probably there's been others, but anyway, I represent the Jackson County Farm Bureau and myself, and I think that there's been a lot of publicity about some of the Farm Bureaus that have enjoined a suit against Measure 37, and that I would like to say is like 5 Farm Bureaus out of 37 counties. So don't think that that's the only attitude of the Farm Bureau. But down here, 37 passed even higher percentage than it did in the state. And I want to thank the county. Jackson County has done a hell of a job in trying to make it work. And I know there's some ambiguity. Anyway, there's some things that need to be cleared up. But I think that the basis of Measure 37 is right. Under LCDC, we're expanding. You talk about saving the best farmland. Under LCDC, Central Point and Eagle Point are expanding into the best farmland we've got in this valley. And we don't have a lot of good farmland in this valley. We're not like the Willamette Valley where we got thousands of acres of good farmland. We got a little bit of good farmland, and we got a hell of a lot of marginal farmland. And the cities of Central Point and Eagle Point have chose to expand. Jacksonville, Ashland, they don't want to expand. They're in the areas where the marginal farmland is, or the land that could be expanded on without messing up the best farmland. But I'm not saying that it's wrong for them to expand. It's just that they happen to be in a location where the best farmland is. And I think that LCDC isn't working down here, let's put it that way. And that's the main reason I think that people have gotten behind 37 is because LCDC is not working. I guess that's about all I got to say at this point. I just urge you to. I agree it needs to be tweaked. There's things that need to be defined and things that need to be explained better. And I'm sure that Oregonians in Action fully understands that and agrees with that. And my urging is that you consider them when you do make changes to it. And that's all I have to say.
Mr. Ryan, I just need you to identify yourself for the record.
I'm Bill Ryan, and I'm lived here all my life. I spent a little time in Alaska, but I've lived here and farmed here all my life. So,
thank you very much. Any questions, Representative Smith?
Just one for the panel, and thank you, Chair Girard. Do you have any comment on the lot of tract that is in Senate Bill 1037?
I'm not familiar. Can you explain that?
The way that I'm reading that bill is lot of tract means one house. If you already have a house on whatever acreage, it doesn't matter. You can't qualify for Measure 37.
Lot of record, I think it is, or something.
No, we voted on lot of record. So
really?
If you haven't read it, maybe you need
to
read it.
Yeah, I have
it.
Not.
No,
okay, thank you.
Mr. Chair, can I follow up briefly on that?
Yes, Representative Buckley.
Mr. Frick, maybe you could be the person that could help clear us up the tract of record compared to lot of record. Can you offer some comments on why one would be preferable to the other?
Well, when you're saying a tract, are you talking about a parcel of land?
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
Well, you know, if it passes the litmus test, I call it, where for public safety, roadways, septic conditions, wells, if it's in a rural area, and the intent was legal lot of record on that to build a house, then I think that it should be allowed to be developed on. Now, again, you know, when you've got Woodlot Resource Zone, there's a gentleman sitting over here, Lyle Woodcock, that owns 140 acres out in the Williams-Applegate area, and he has approximately 80 acres in those secondary marginal lands under Woodlot Resource. He should be able to have a home on every 20-acre site of Woodlot Resource, or if his intent was that those were going to be 5-acre parcels, one home per 5-acre parcel on that type of elevation, and it would pass the litmus test of fire safety, roadways. I think that one house per 5-acre tract would be fine.
Could I,
Mr. Chairman?
Could I comment on that further?
Certainly. You need to re-identify yourself. Again,
Frank,
right?
Frank Goodson. I agree with that. Any tract of record or lot of record, if it was created legally and it passes the litmus test, I think that you ought to be able to build on it. I don't know that there's another state in the union that says you can't do that. And also, I think that you know, Measure 37 relied on how long you've owned it relative to when a law was created. Well, that was to get a bill passed. But if you want to be fair and you're going to tweak this, You know, many parcels have been reconveyed, and they're sitting out there, and they're the kind of parcels that should be built on, but they don't fall within Measure 37 now, and they may not fall within your bill, your bills that you're working on. So, you know, if it was legally created and it falls in the litmus test and it's not great farmland, you ought to be able to build on it.
Representative Anderson.
I think to clarify, and maybe Representative Buckley would want to put in his two cents too, but a lot of record meant that you could build a single-family dwelling on one parcel. Tract of record, as I understand it, means you can build one house on a tract. Might be 200 acres.
Mm-hmm.
There is a difference.
There is a difference. Then I would have to say that I'd be in opposition to that.
Panel, thank you very much, gentlemen. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
J. Michael Lanier, Deborah Miller, and John Graves. They come forward, please. Mr. Lanier, you'd like to start, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Mike Lanier. I'm the Vice President of Richard Stevens and Associates. Here in Medford, we are a land use consulting firm. We've been practicing our craft before the county commissioners and planning commissions and city councils of Southern Oregon and Northern California for about 23 years. The impact of what you are discussing this evening in terms of Measure 37, I think, is extremely germane here in Jackson County. Jackson County has a flawed land use inventory for a number of reasons which we won't go into this evening. We have approximately 1.79 million acres, 1.79 million acres in the county, and of those, 1,486,000 are zoned for forest uses, and 1 million acres of those are managed by the federal government. Of the 306,000 acres that are left over, the Jackson County Comprehensive Plan showed that 43,593 acres were actually utilized for farm crops. This is from the Comprehensive Plan. The balance of those lands that are zoned EFU in this county are, in fact, marginal lands. They are lands that, for whatever reason, due to parcel size, due to the soils classifications and the orientation of the property, simply are not farmlands. And those are the lands that Measure 37 really addresses in this county. And I think our county is going to show probably more of those kinds of applications over the course of the next year and a half. In our land use consulting business, we are currently representing approximately 56 individual property owners in preparing land use reports that will be handed to their attorneys for submittal to Jackson County for Measure 37 claims. In every instance, the claim isn't really about money. It is, in fact, about how can I really use my property in a reasonable manner, consistent with what it really is, and not have the state telling me where I can live on my property. And that's the crux. In closing, the primary issues that we see, particularly facing this committee, is of course the transferability issue. I have a number of clients who are elderly. If we are successful in processing a Measure 37 claim for them, and the partitioning and the construction of the dwelling on that property doesn't occur in their lifetime, that whole process is a moot point. We believe the transferable right of the partitioning and the development needs to go forward as part of your amendments to this bill. And the multiple jurisdiction issue is our second question. Jackson County, all the county boards and commissioners are subdivisions of the state. They are required to enforce the state laws. If the state is now saying, well, we have to apply for a Measure 37 relief at the county level, and then again from the Division of State Lands, and then again from the DEQ, and then again from the Water Resources Board, this creates a morass of technical addressing that is just really almost incomprehensible to the average person. We believe if the Board of County Commissioners, who have been enforcing the law, waive the Measure 37 right, or modify it, or do not apply it, whichever choice they make, is that that should be acknowledged by the state. Thank you very much.
Ms. Miller?
Hi. Thank you very much for coming down. It's neat to not have to travel to Salem. My concern is really for the future of the state. Part of me says that just let the chips fall where they may, and we're going to let the electorate take the consequences of our actions by voting for Measure 37 and have the sagebrush subdivisions and the tacky tracts that Governor McCall talked about. And I moved here when he was the governor, and that was the only reason I wanted to come to Oregon, is I thought McCall was so visionary, and wow, finally somebody who thought about the future and not just the next quarterly bottom line. So we live outside the city, and our grandson lives in Josephine County. So I have to not think revenge, but think of thoughtful directions to preserve the resource land that will feed the world and the beauty of the spaces that you all gloat about that can be lost, and they feed the soil, the soul. And so those are the things I'm interested in tonight. The measure was so loosely written that you as legislators are faced with writing the implementing ordinances. And so I would ask you to consider a two-tiered approach to Measure 37 that you're going to have to deal with. Ostensibly, the bill was to provide for a way for grandmas to add a home for their children on their farm parcel. Okay? So if this is what the authors of 37 wanted, then I ask that you would write the policies that these claims can be judged. One, to verify the validity. Is this really what this person had in mind several years ago and was restricted from doing it? What are the potential costs and impacts? And then the waiver or the compensation, because the bill does allow for compensation, be decided. But I also ask that you don't treat speculators as easily for their scheming. And I'd like that another standard be adopted for proposals that are really not much more than a way to just destroy all the planning that the regions have done and all the orderly growth. And I'm going to give you a specific example. You were traveling today or yesterday, and you may not have seen the Oregonian this morning, but the front page article had to do with a family in the western part of the Willamette Valley, very easily driving distance from Salem. It's an area I'm very familiar with because I had relatives who lived there. It's a parcel of, I believe, 77 acres that is about 6 miles east of Dallas on Highway 233, and just where the road to Fall City, which if you've ever been to Fall City, you know it's 2 blocks by 3 on a good day. And this family, at the urging of their real estate agent, who is quoted in the paper as saying, I told him to go for the max, and they want a waiver to build a huge shopping center about as big, as they said, as Washington Square, and 17 homes on that farmland. Well, I would tell you that I know within a mile radius of that particular parcel that there's maybe 150 people max. So this is fantasy. And so are we as a state going to provide them either with the ability to do that, and it will probably fail, or provide them how much compensation for a Washington Square kind of shopping center and 17 homes? I don't know. But that's a whole different story than Grandma and her little house next door. So what I would ask that you adopt wording to deal with these frivolous suits, and that's what I consider it to be. What is the claimant responsible for? I don't think the claimant should be able to sell to a speculator. This is for the owner. It says in 37, it's for the owner of the property. I know that there were speculators here in this valley over in Phoenix with the ranches, and 3 days after the election, calling the farmers and saying, hey, let's talk. So I know it's happening. Proof of claim validity must be written in. Did the owner plan and want to do this particular project a long time ago, and he was restricted, and he's been saying for 30 years, darn it, I really wanted to do that? Or is it something that just was concoction last week? Who pays when the project is begun and it's not finished? And what rights do those of us who are unfavorably impacted have? I think there's a fairness issue for us. I want you to consider the future of agriculture. My husband was involved in it, and growth kind of pushed him out. He was a large animal veterinarian. I dug. And that it employs, it's the third highest employer of our state, and the future health for all of us in the state. Thank you.
Mr. Graves.
Thank you. John Graves. Yeah. John Graves. I'm a grower. I have an orchard outside of Phoenix. And I'm the enviable position to be within about 50 yards of the urban growth boundary of Phoenix, which leads me to all kinds of problems in my orchard as far as trespassing, damage, etc. Across the street from me, there's a property, a 40-acre property, that is going to probably qualify for Measure 37. Now, my orchard is one thing, but behind my orchard, there's several orchards. And what I'm worried about is once this whole thing starts to move around a little bit, there's going to be a domino effect. And we're going to lose all the orchards on the west side of Phoenix. And it's just going to be a shame because we're employing people. We're supplying money to the state. And we have agricultural property. And it's going to go down the rat hole. Now, I'm holding the line. And I'm the head end of that group of orchards, by the way. And everybody's sort of looking at me like I'm crazy. Why don't I get involved, do something to get rid of this orchard? So it's really important to me that you consider giving people compensation rather than waivers, because a waiver means they can do anything they want with the land, and it's just going to ruin the environment that all the people moved to Southern Oregon for. If you compensate them for the land, then they would have to keep the same rules. And then the land would stay the same, and they would have money. And the whole county would certainly benefit by that. As I say, as a grower, especially after last night and a few other nights, it's pretty cold down here. We're fighting to keep these orchards going. It is a low-margin business. There's no question about it. We're looking to maybe have different crops. We're going to keep in the business, but we need the help of being protected, and we need Measure 37 to go into a compensation format rather than giving people waivers to do whatever they want with the property. So I would like you to help me protect the orchards. Thank you very much.
Any questions of this panel? Thank you.
Thank you.
Dorothy Mitchell. T. Moore and Chris Skripotis. How bad did I mess that up?
Skripotis, about that last E.
Well, I saw you grimace when I said 2 minutes, and so far I haven't held anybody to 2 minutes, so.
I'm glad that, Mr. Chairman.
Dorothy, would you like to start off?
Yes, I would. Thank you. My name is Dorothy Mitchell. I live at 8000 Dead Indian Memorial Road, Ashland. My husband and I acquired this property in 1962. We've lived on it and worked it as ranching since that time. Now, our children are all grown, and they're scattered from Timbuktu, and they're not interested in farming. There's no money in it anyway, the cattle industry. So we have about 800 acres. We would like to do a little bit of developing. but we come against a few things in Measure 37. The transferable rights is one of them. Another one is if we were allowed to acquire a waiver compensation. My husband and I aren't in very good health. We would hope that there would be some document that would let this go, let what is ours originally pass on to our children, our family. And that's why I'm here this evening. I want to make this recommendation that the waiver or the compensation doesn't go with the people, goes with the land. Even though I'm aware that because we've acquired this property under Measure 37, we acquired it in 1962. We still, if we were to do any developing and pass on, then the children or whomever we were involved with would be in limbo. And these two issues is my main concern. Now, if we, in doing the developing, we have a lot of land that is not developable. You can't develop it. It's 8 miles up Dead Indian. It's Breast Mountain that we own. And this property would be an open space. There would be a development around, but most of this would be at least 500 acres would go with the development, but it would be open space. And that's kind of where we are right now. And I thank you folks for your time.
Moore?
Yeah. I'm Trouty Moore. My husband and I have been farming wine grapes since 1989 in the valley. We currently farm 150 acres. I'm very glad to hear you say that Measure 37 is going to protect farmland. But I'd like to point out that for grapes, what is high-value farmland is Class 3 and 4, not just 1 and 2. And I hope very much that you'll take consideration of that. The grape industry in Oregon, southern Oregon, grew from 250 acres in 1980 to 2,500. Now just the value of the grapes is $4.5 million each year to the economy, plus the value of the wineries. It spills over into the tourist industry. It spills over into the restaurants, the motels, and so on. So agriculture in this valley, along with the pears and every other type of agriculture that we have, is really extremely important. And my concern is that when people try to exercise their Measure 37 rights, they're going to feel that they can put a lot of houses in the middle of farmland, or they could put a mansion in the middle of a piece of farmland, which all of these things would remove the farmland that we have in the valley, and there's precious little of it. And I really would hope very much that you will consider that Southern Oregon has some special problems and some special advantages. And it can't be put in with what goes on in the Willamette Valley. I also do think that for someone who's farming a piece of land, there is a big advantage in being able to live on it. And as you get to be our age, if you have a family member who would like to take over, perhaps they also ought to be allowed to live on it. And that may be the purpose of Measure 37. But I don't think that the people of Oregon intended Measure 37 to be a free-for-all for developers. And I think that those, and I don't envy you the job of trying to get this all straightened out. It's very complex and very difficult. But Oregon is a really special place, and we hope it doesn't end up looking like Southern California. Thank you.
Ms. Moore, we thank you for bringing up the vineyards portion.
I'm sorry.
We thank you very much for bringing up the vineyards, because the future in that area is a bright one in Oregon and needs to be considered as we look at Measure 37. So thank you for bringing the vineyards in.
You're very welcome.
All right, Chris, it's your turn.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity this evening to address you, and I welcome you to Southern Oregon, to Jackson County in particular. My name is Chris Skreptis. I reside at 4424 Highway 66 in Ashland, and I have owned and farmed a small acreage south of Ashland since 1968. Much of what I'm going to say today is probably arguing against self-interest, because my property is indeed eligible for a Measure 37 claim. However, I'm going to remind you an extremely important point here, and that is that those of us, for those of us who farm, your neighbor is your most valuable friend. He is the person who sees your barn on fire. He sees intruders coming onto your property and perhaps damaging your property, stealing materials. He's the one that notices one of your fences is down and your animals are getting out. All of these things are important. He's the one who provides and helps you when your well goes dry, and maybe you can get water from him until you can take care of that. So I think that is an extremely important issue for you to be considering and be aware of. And it is from this perspective that I'm going to address Measure 37. I'm also going to make the assumption, and I hope and I trust it is valid, that the intent of 37 is not to dismantle the entire land use system of Oregon by this or by any other legislative body, but rather to make sure that it is indeed fair to all the parties. The proponents of Measure 37 argued that fairness was an extremely important portion of Measure 37. But I ask you, how fair is it to allow neighbors of similarly situated land to undergo development which can indeed impact those of us who farm? Now, I noticed in looking over your websites that several of you on this committee have a farming background or are engaged in farming. So I know that you have knowledge of the problems that accrue to the farmer when adjoining and adjacent development occurs. Those of us who farm have enjoyed special farm use assessment over the years. The state of Oregon has made a conscious decision early on under ORS 215-243 that farmland is to be preserved, and indeed they have offered special incentives in order to maintain that farmland in farm use. I would submit that this item alone can serve to provide a means of compensation, and I'll return to that in a moment. With respect to the following issues, I ask that you clarify them and you address them. Now, Chairman Gerard has already summarized some of these, so I'm going to kind of read them and go through them very rapidly so as to not to leave any of them out. But first, I would urge the committee to provide a uniformity in the application procedure so that statewide all citizens are playing with the same deck of cards. They are all treated the same, including all applicants for Measure 37 claims. Provisions are needed as to how the claims are going to be administered. There needs to be a uniform fee schedule. Currently in Jackson County, we don't charge any application fees. The result of that is that our planning staff is literally committed to processing all of these claims without any compensation, without any additional help. I submit to you that a uniform fee schedule must be adopted. The requirement for providing specific information needs to be addressed. Currently, applicants are told by various groups, you don't have to provide any information. Just say you're making a claim. Then it's incumbent upon the planning staff to try to sift out exactly what is the application, what are they applying for, what do they want, and so forth. I believe that this next item, you must add a clarification that continuous uninterrupted ownership is required to qualify as an owner. Already here in Jackson County, we are seeing the recruitment of previous owners back into ownership by enticing them to accept a small ownership interest in the subject property so that they qualify for a Measure 37 claim. Now, I submit to you, if the intent is to dismantle the system, if I were going to arrive at a way, a means of dismantling the entire system, that is what I would pursue. And that is, go out, find someone who owned this land 20, 30 years ago, offer them an interest. It doesn't have to be substantial. Say, I'll put you back on ownership. Now that person can make the argument, I own this property since 1964, 1972, whenever. I submit to you that unless you clarify this, it's going to be a constant source of litigation. You've got to clarify that continuous ownership means uninterrupted ownership. You've heard a lot of comments about the transferability of developmental rights. I believe the Attorney General has already addressed that issue, and I urge the legislature to affirm the opinion by promulgating appropriate legislation.
Chris, you're at 5 minutes now, so.
Okay, I'll let me just very quickly wrap up. Thank you. Many of us are being advised by Oregonians in Action not to make claims, but to wait until such time as the legislature is out of session in order to demonstrate that indeed there aren't very many claims being filed. I submit to you that this is subverting the intent of Measure 37, and I believe you need to look at the rolling provisions of filing claims that are inherent in Measure 37. Last item, the proposed House Bill 3081, which you have before you, which is an attempt to grandfather all illegally created parcels and to call them legally created. I would submit to you, you've heard from folks offering testimony that repeatedly, as long as the parcel was lawfully created, we ought to be able to do whatever we want. Well, if you are going to now allow grandfathering of all illegally created parcels, I would submit to you that the lawfully created provisions of statute in the lot of record, the non-farm dwelling, and in land divisions are meaningless. I believe that compensation is the way to go, and I hope that you'll take the time to read the written testimony which I've submitted. And as to how you compensate, I would submit to you that those of us who have enjoyed special farm use assessment and we want to file a Measure 37 claim, there should be a retroactive provision which goes back and reclaims all the money that all the taxpayers have paid on our behalf so that we could continue to farm. And I spell out that, and I would be very happy to provide you with concrete examples of what I suggest.
Okay.
I want to thank you very much for the opportunity to address you, and I also want to thank the chair for affording me the extra minutes, and I'm sorry I did speak rather rapidly, but trust that you can follow my written testimony, and I'd be happy to address any questions you might have.
Committee have any questions of this panel? Representative Buckley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll be very brief to react to this panel. Chris, I'll be contacting you soon to see if you're available to be hired as my legislative assistant. Ms. Moore, I appreciate you bringing up the information about the vineyards. And for the Chair's information, I do have a statement that was emailed to my office from John Weisinger, who is the outgoing chair of the Oregon Wine Association, concerning that point on the vineyards as well, and I will get that to your office. And one question, please, for Ms. Mitchell, on compensation, would you feel that it was a fair course for the state to take if compensation was transferable? If you could transfer the right of compensation to your children, would that be instead
that
of
that would waiting? Be great, yes, because my husband has Parkinson's, and I've had a heart valve transplant. Neither one of us are in good health. If we were to start this big project, it would be over a period of maybe 5 or 6 years. And that way, we don't know, you know, just what tomorrow's going to bring.
I guess if I could follow real quickly. What I was trying to make the distinction of, instead of the transferability of the development, but the transferability of compensation.
Compensation would be great.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions? Seeing none, thank you, panel, very much.
Thank you very much.
I'm going to have a problem with this. Ronald Bjork? Oh, good for me. Rich Fairbanks and Jack Benedict. Committee, we have 12 people remaining to testify after this panel.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to be able to discuss Measure 37 with you tonight. I'm the president of Jackson County Farm Bureau, and Jackson County Farm Bureau put a measure in the ballot, in the pamphlet, in favor of Measure 37. So we are in favor of Measure 37. This measure will help to keep our farms with the family that has been farming them for many years. And the reason it will help keep them there is because with the increasing land values in our area, the young farmer or the person that wants to stay on the farm can't afford to buy a house off the farm, but if he can put a house on the farm, then he will be able to continue to farm with his folks and eventually assume the ranch. The measure puts in place the rights that were taken away from the owners of the property before the zoning. Myself, I happen to be one of those people. I've owned my property out there since 1959. So, you know, I definitely fit in this particular thing, but I'm all in favor of this measure, and I might add that I've been farming right next to subdivisions for the last 30 years, and, you know, I really haven't had a lot of problems.
Thank you. Mr. Fairbanks?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you very much for letting us speak. My name is Rich Fairbanks. I live out in the Applegate. I own forest land, and I've worked in forest management since 1972. And I've had the good fortune to be able to travel around the West and observe how rural lands are managed in several different Western states. Based on that experience, I really have come to believe that Oregon land use law, at least with respect to forests, works. It really works. It's kept the sprawl from crawling up through the canyons. It's made our fire problems a lot simpler to deal with than, for example, California. It works. SB 100, Oregon land use law, whatever you want to call it, does what it said it would do. It provides for orderly development while conserving forest and farmlands. Now it's time for Measure 37 supporters to do what they said they were going to do. Is this thing working? All right, okay. They got to do what they said they were going to do. The first three words of Measure 37's ballot title are government shall pay. Okay? It doesn't say anything about creating a privileged class that gets to do stuff on their land that people like me don't get to do because I didn't buy my land until I saved up enough money to buy it, which was a little later, etc. We got to keep this a level playing field, folks. So let's forget about waiving our land use laws. Let's compensate. The alternative is more sprawl. So we can compensate and we can californicate. Let's do the right thing. Thank you very much for the opportunity to speak.
Mr. Benedict.
I'm Jack Benedict. I've been a realtor in this valley about 24 years. I'm not a developer. I work with small rural parcels, generally on resale. This county is about the size of Delaware, and I walked much of the northern half of it that's in private property ownership. Private property ownership is guaranteed in the United States Constitution, and that is something that goes beyond some of the rulings in Oregon that the LCDC has imposed on us that limit our use and our values. I would like to comment that I've been to Russia several times lately, and I greatly, greatly appreciate what we have here with our private property ownership. We are about 83% private property ownership among individuals here and only 17% in Russia, and that's why we have our economy the way it is. This is the basis. Private property ownership is the basis of our wealth and our power here. We don't appreciate it. We don't understand it. They're remodeling an old building there, philosophically speaking, by working on the roof. And we have a good foundation, and we're chipping away at it. Measure 37 addresses some of the sins of the past. That was its purpose. And that's a good start. I hear some of the opposition having some emotional reasons that perhaps aren't well based in science or logic. Crops need water. We're limited with water. And if we're going to propagate more grapes, we need to have more irrigation, and that those rights are used up. We need to have that transfer of use, because without it, what good is the measure? That's the heart of ownership. Private property ownership, I resent someone else telling me what to do with my property. We came here as immigrants from elsewhere so that we could get out from under the control of government. And Measure 37 helps redeem some of those things that have been taken from us. Thank you for letting me share. Oh, I do have one other comment. Mr. Richardson had a really interesting comment earlier about multiple sewer systems, and I think one of the uses of rural lands that aren't farmable, aren't forestable, and under the 2,500-foot level, you have a lot of problem raising forests because of lack of water and in poor soils in this valley. If cluster housing were allowed, a community septic system, a community water system where the water table allows it, single driveway. City services are not having to be taken clear out into the county, and I think people would pay for what they wanted with small clusters of housing where they would have views and have private situations of their own payment and building. And not have to rely on city services. We wouldn't have the sprawl of curbs and gutters out there where people do want to have a little room to themselves on their own lands. Thank you.
Thank you. We are essentially out of time. We have about 10 more people I'll call folks up, but I'm going to have to ask that you do. If you have something different than what you've heard tonight and would like to present that, wonderful. If you want to summarize and just put a very short duplication in, that's fine. We are supposed to be out of here in 30 minutes, and we have a lot of equipment to take with us. So I do ask your help in helping us close this down. Rick Harris, John Zupan, and Trish Bocock, could you come quickly?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Rick Harris. I live on a 10-acre farm in Talent. I appreciate the opportunity to address you, and thanks for coming to Medford. I'm a real estate broker, have been for 16 years. I represent a number of private property owners, and I speak as a representative. One of the important things about transferability that you need to think about, if you don't have transferability, you have a paper right. That is, banks won't loan, title companies won't insure. So it means nothing without transferability. Second, affordability. One of the great challenges of our land use system in this state is it has artificially constrained the available properties, which has driven up prices. Representative Buckley knows a great deal about the issues of affordability in our end of the county. They're spreading across the state. If what you do is compensate solely, you continue to limit the supply of available lands, you drive up the cost of housing across the state by raising the price, because all of the schemes that I've heard about in order to raise those funds raise the cost of housing. So you have to be quite careful, I think, in crafting your response that you don't also make houses even less affordable to people to own. The last thing I want to say is you've heard really what Measure 37 is about. You've heard from people who care deeply on all sides of the issue, and I don't envy you the challenge of trying to put this together. But I will say that smart people like you, taking all of the pieces into account, will craft the kind of peace that builds community instead of continuing to divide us, and I hope that you can do that. Thank you.
Mr. Zupan.
I'm John Zupan. I was born and raised in Ashland, graduated from Southern Oregon College, moved to the big city of Medford in 1974. I'm president of the Rogue Valley Association of Realtors, started my real estate career in 1972. And I will get away. I have two offices with approximately 50 agents, and we have all kinds of stories we can tell you about clients coming up and so forth, buying dream parcels and not being able to build on. But I'm going to take it a little different direction. I've heard the term compensation many, many times tonight. I also heard one person mention taxation, which made the hair on the back of my head raise, because I figured if we start compensating, somebody's got to pay for it. What most of these people we're seeing really want is they want to use the land for what they purchased it for. Just a short history lesson. We went back, if you remember, Measure 7 came through. It was voted in by the people. It basically did the same thing. The Supreme Court threw it out. About a year and a half ago, I was at a legislative meeting up in Salem, and I was talking to one of your colleagues from somewhere just north of here, so that kind of leaves it open to you. But anyway, at intermission, I was discussing what a mess 37 would put the county and cities of the state into if it passes. And if we could just get a lot of record, I think Representative Richardson had a lot of record bill going at that time, which didn't make it through. I said, all we need to do is let these people build a house on their property. His attitude was, it won't pass, and if it does, we'll fix it. And right then, I decided I was voting for 37. Prior to that, I wasn't going to. If you notice, the Oregon Association of Realtors didn't take a position on it. But it's that attitude from our legislature that really upsets the people in this state. And what we want you guys to do, we've got the bill there. Don't go like our attorney general did and say, oh, this is a monetary issue. This is not a monetary issue. This is a land use issue. We've got people that want to use their property for what they purchased it for. I know you guys can get together as a group and come up with some type of a compromise and solution that lets people use it for what they want without costing the taxpayers of this state money. Because I think if you don't, you're going to be facing it again in 2 to 4 years. Thank you.
Mrs. Boca.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, committee, thank you so much for coming here. My name is Trish Bocock. I live at 705 EC Street in Jacksonville, Oregon, and I'm here today on behalf of the League of Women Voters of the Rogue Valley. I have a very brief statement for you. The League is urging this committee, when adopting statutory authority regarding Measure 37, to please provide a mechanism for compensation. There was a measure for compensation in a provision for compensation in the measure, and we would like for you guys to include that in any bill that you set forth. In addition to that, we would like for you to clarify all the ambiguities, and there are many, and you got a big job in front of you, and we really do appreciate the work you're going to put into this. While you are clarifying the ambiguities, we would ask that you please be very, very careful to respect Oregon land use laws that have developed into some, there are some good ones out there as well over the past 30 years, and we just ask that you please respect that as well. The League of Women Voters of the Rogue Valley has adopted the statement from the League of Women Voters of Oregon, and who have filed a complete written statement, and all the details of our position are set forth in that statement, and we thank you.
Any questions from the committee? Ms. Bocock, let me ask you quick question. In the discussion of compensation, where do we get the money?
And that's your job. It's a tough question. It's a very tough question. It's a very tough question, and I think that there have been some interesting proposals here this evening that probably need to be looked at and fleshed out. I don't know. I don't think it just is looking at taxation. I think there may be some other avenues as well available, and it's a tough question, but it is in the bill. In Measure 37 specifically did set forth compensation, and that's what the people of the state of Oregon voted on, and so the League does believe that it should be included in any legislation that comes forward.
And I can assure you this committee will give compensation a serious consideration.
Thank you.
Representative Summer.
Ma'am, having compensated all the private property owners with a claim for use of their land, having compensated all of them, what then have we done? How have we accomplished anything? The same property owners are still going to own the same property, and they still aren't going to be able to build on it.
I think compensation is one avenue. It needs to be looked at very carefully. It's not the only avenue, and I don't believe the League is advocating that every single property owner be compensated. It simply should be included in the procedural mechanism when reviewing a Measure 37 claim as set forth under the the law that the voters voted for.
I've read estimates as possibly between $500 million and $1 billion in compensation costs to the counties and state. That is a lot of money.
Yes, sir, it is a lot of money, and I don't know, I have not privy to all of those numbers. I do know that those numbers were presented to the voters at the time that the measure was set forth for the voters to vote on, and the voters said that, yes, we do want this measure, and it just simply needs to be included in the statutory authority that comes forth from the legislature.
Thank you.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We could fund that all today. But you wouldn't like the screams from K-12.
Yeah.
Any other questions? Representative Ackerman. You've stimulated the committee.
We heard a lot about compensation tonight, and I just wanted to give you my perspective of really what Measure 37 says. And you're right. If you do establish a compensable loss of market value, you are entitled to compensation. But there's more to it. Compensation can only be paid if the public entity, such as the state or the county, specifically appropriates money for that purpose. So that's a limitation on getting paid. And lastly, if you're not paid within 2 years, then your judgment for money converts into a waiver. So I'm only bringing that out because that's what the Act says as written. So in my mind, it's a very limited method of getting compensation. It probably favors the other methods of redressing the Measure 37 injustices.
Representative Escobar.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, the word compensation leads me to believe we've taken some. That's exactly what 37's about. We've taken people's rights for their property. I would like to give a little bit of an overview, though, of why this county has such a messed up zoning. And this is my understanding This isn't gospel, and maybe somebody will refute it. But it's my understanding that this county wanted to be one of the first ones involved with State Goal 100, so they did a broad brush overlay, did not even look at the properties, have EFU in places that I can show you in Sam's Valley, EFU, that the only thing you can grow out there is black widows and rocks. The intent was we would get on with State Goal 100 and come back and look at each one of those properties and evaluate them at a later date. Well, the later date is 2005, and we haven't done that. That's what a lot of this is about. The other part is government not listening. 37 was a clear message. I mean, not 37, but 7. When 7 was struck down, I was waiting for something else, and guess what? 37 came along. If 37 goes down, there will be something in 2 more years or 4 more years. That's very correct. So I think what we have in front of us is Measure 37. It's up to us to craft some of the irregularities in 37, but I don't think we need to be changing the intent of 37. I know 60-some percent of this county was for 37. So therefore, I as a legislator will try to achieve what the intent of 37 was. Now, having said that, I do have some struggles with transferability. I have some struggles with what if you take your property and put it into a living trust? Does that change the ownership of that property, even though it's your trust? So there are some things that are dangling out here that we need to correct. But 37 is a clear message from people in this county and this state that they want their rights, and it's not about compensation. How many people have been up here today to say, it isn't the money? So I leave you with that thought.
Representative Greenland.
Yes, I really would like to ask you a compensation question. I think most of the people voting for Measure 37 assumed it was to compensate or to redress something that had happened in the last 30 years. The way the statute's written is it now goes forward into perpetuity. So any time a city or a county passes a new zoning law or a new any land use action, the sense is there'll be winners and there'll be losers. Some people's property value will go up. You take something into an urban growth boundary, you increase the value of many properties and you may decrease the ability of others. So when we're talking about compensation, we're not talking about what happened between 1975 and 2005. We're talking about what happens between 2005 and 2055. And is your sense about compensation that we might be talking about taking some of the values of the winners in future land use action and converting that to compensate for the losers in land use actions? I mean, is that the sort of thing that League of Women Voters was thinking about?
Well, actually, you're getting out of the area that I'm being given authority, if you will, to address as we are endorsing.
Make it up like we do.
No, I won't. you can make it up perhaps for me. Ed, the League of Women Voters of Oregon has submitted a detailed written statement regarding the League of Women Voters position, and I would ask you to please refer to that.
Thank you.
Good answer.
Thank you, panel, very much. Bob Valadeo, Stephen Williams, and Robert Merriam.
Everybody forgets that. I don't care about the past. Yeah, we can take care of the past.
Mr. Chairman, I have to scold you for not reading it. I come 135 miles.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh. Sat on the sign-up sheet.
My wife put it down.
Sir, I'm not going to get between you and your wife. Bob, you're the first one on the list, so.
Me?
Yeah, Bob Valadeo.
No, that's it.
Oh, well.
My name's Robert, so I didn't know which one you were talking about.
Yes, yeah, shove that mic over there for him, if you will.
Here you go.
Thank you very much. I'm Bob Valadeo from Klamath County, Bly, Oregon.
I have a cow-calf operation, a little over 1,000 acres. I voted no on 37. We're stuck with it, so let's see if we can do something with it. Now, everybody was talking about compensation. The only reason why 37 passed was those words, just compensation. I know that many of you, we don't have any money in Oregon to pay for compensation on the state level or the county level. So I think all of us realize that. I really feel we should put a moratorium on 37 for at least 5 years till we can come up with a reasonable fix on the just compensation. I think all of you agree there is no money within the state to pay for some of these lands. Now, I really feel 37 is going to damage agriculture in this state. I have a list from the extension office. I can go over figures, but it'll take too long to give you all the figures on the different commodities in Oregon on agriculture. I'd like to answer one realtor on these low-valued lands in Klamath County. These low-valued lands in Klamath County are cattle range. That is the number one commodity in Klamath County. This is from 2003, so the new data has not come up. At that period of time, that one commodity in Klamath County was over $60 million. It's not the largest commodity. If you have all the farming part, it will come to something like $75 to $80 million. But it's the one single largest commodity in Klamath County on these low, so-called low-valued agricultural lands. And I have a neighbor which in the next week will be moving some of his cattle, basically about 300 head, to some of this low-valued farmland to graze his cattle for the summer. I think you know it's Bill, Butch Hadley and Rod Hadley. We've been at your hearings there when you were county commissioner. There's going to be a real tough fix on this. How we're coming up with money for just compensation, I really don't know. And in the legislature, some of them I've talked to really wish they never heard of 37. And probably a few of you here feel the same way. But 37 is going to be damaging to agriculture if you start allowing these large parcels of land to be developed. And what makes me so nervous, 6 ranches within a 30-mile radius where I live sold in this last month. And who bought them? 4 of them were bought by doctors, one by a veterinarian from Petaluma, California, and the 6th one, I'm not sure what he does. What do you think they're interested in? They're interested in development. The largest piece of ground is 3,400 acres. The smallest piece is 160 acres. Now, to go back to Butch, he still drives his cattle the old-fashioned way that he did 150 years ago, by horseback up to his upper ranch, which is basically about 20 miles from his home ranch. Can you imagine what 20-acre parcels, the little houses in there, when he'd drive 300 cows through them, what it would be like? You're destroying a way of life that his family had been doing it for almost 100 years. Yes, I am against 37. If we can fix it, let's do it. But to God, if you're going to do something, do it what they said. The people voted for just compensation, and all of you are going to have to remember that. Even if there is no money for just compensation, I really feel you should put a moratorium on this till we can come up with a good solution. Thank you.
Steve Williams.
Hi, I'm a small farmer, Williams, Oregon, which is the southern part of Josephine County. I want to give you a good example of why you need a compensation provision and money for it. In Josephine County, we have 2 proposals under Measure 37 claims, kind of on the table. One's been submitted, one hasn't yet, for strip malls out in the middle of agricultural lands, along with some houses as well. And if they could be compensated, unwarranted development like that out in the middle of agricultural land could be avoided. And I have an idea coming up with the money for compensation. as you all know, coming from various parts of the state, people are flocking to Oregon primarily for the quality of life here. And in the process, you know, even without Measure 37, it's getting cut up pretty good. You know, farms are disappearing right and left. Josephine County, we have precious little farmland to begin with, and we've got less and less all the time because people want to live here, you know. And so I think that people, if they want to live here, I think they should pay a price. And I think that you could charge a small percentage on every real estate transaction and come up with a lot of money for compensation. Thanks.
Robert? My name is Robert Merriam from Grants Pass, and I voted against Measure 37. The two things that bother me a lot about that measure is what's been talked about here a lot tonight, compensation. Not many of the counties I think could pay it. Josephine County, the sheriff doesn't have enough. The road department doesn't have enough. So where are you going to get the money? I mean, there isn't enough money to pay the bills now. So where's the money coming from? So as I understand, Measure 37 says that there's two alternatives, either compensation or basically granting a permit for the requested use, which basically makes the land use laws gutless. It just disregards them. Oregon, I think, has had a real good reputation, probably the best in the nation, for land use planning. When we came up here, we didn't find strip malls, we didn't find developments out that a speculator had put out there. Everything was an orderly development. Came from California, Southern California, where places were put out on the middle of the desert, put out here, there. California didn't do any regulation at all. It was all up to the counties. And as a result, you had 58 different types of land use regulations, management, and you had 58 different situations that certainly were worse than found here in Oregon. So I would ask that the compensation end of it, obviously the counties can't pay off for all these claims. So then what are they going to do? They're going to have to probably okay the request, then find land use development that Oregon we see today, where urban growth areas expand from already existing cities. I'm not saying that it has to be right in the next block, but it's an orderly planned development, and I think that's damn hard to beat. So I would like you to consider that. And in Measure 37 is here, as this gentleman said, let's try and use it to where we can keep some of the land use principles that have certainly made Oregon the highly desirable place it is today. Thank you. Thank you, panel, very much.
I have a question.
Representative Smith.
I have a question for the gentleman who's just getting up, Bob. I didn't get your last name, and I apologize. Thank you. Thank you, Chair Gore. I'm also a cattle farmer, raised cattle, and I was very concerned about your saying that Measure 37 would affect agriculture community. How did the four doctors who bought the 160-acre parcels, how would they file a Measure 37?
I didn't understand your question.
How would the four, you said the ranches sold recently near you.
Yes.
Two doctors and lawyers. And
mm-hmm.
How would they file Measure 37 claims?
Well, I think they're just buying it for speculation, hoping they would get a waiver on it where they could go into development. This is what I believe.
Okay.
They're doing it strictly for speculation, right? And they're just going to sit on it and wait till see what happens.
Okay.
And I hope they sit on it for a long time.
Thank you.
Thank you, panel, very much. Peggy McCain, Glenn Archambault, and Calvin Martin. And panel, we have six people at this point remaining. Ms. McCain, do you like to begin?
Thank you. A pleasure to be here with all you distinguished gentlemen and ladies. Well, I am a realtor. I have been up here in Grants Pass for almost 6 years now. I live at the top of a mountain, 40 acres of forest, and it's God's country. And speaking of country, our country was founded on natural law of property ownership. And that, not serfdom, even though we pay taxes, but it's on property ownership. And the best taking care of land has always been private property owners who really care. They assess and actually you do the highest use of their land. And I have worked with a number of geologists also, professors in various top-notch universities. And Southern Oregon has a very turbulent past of geology. Each of our main rivers is a great fault. Look at the volcanoes there are. And this contributes to the variation in all of the geology, which is what you can't really paint with a broad brush and call it all one thing or another. And so I have not come across one of the property owners that has been for measure 37 or is affected by it who wants compensation. They would like to do what they, you know, had intended to do. And in fact, due to the fact that zoning has come in, their land has been devalued while everyone else's has gone up. And so I think that flexibility in the land is very important, you know, of applying. And I do think that transferability is important, too, even though, I mean, if we really took it way back, it would be back to Oregon territory where there were thousands of acres and we would have nobody else, right? And we really do need to proceed as things go. It is natural law. Natural law is God's law. And when you look at and you see what has been best preserved, it has been property that has been really cared for by the, you know, the owner that has to face the droughts, the this, the that. And water is a problem. And when there isn't enough water, what can farmers do? And when you have rocks, you know, in part, no matter what you put onto it and how well you try to take care of it, it's not going to produce. And all of Oregon can't go into grapes. You know, it all has to balance. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. Archambault.
You guys must be getting tired by now. It's been a long day. It's been a long day for myself. My name is Glenn Archambault. I'm a feedlot operator for feeder lambs. Probably most of you are not familiar with that industry. But I'm not here to tell you about that. I'm here to help you with some of the nuts and bolts of the management of Measure 37. I'm the plaintiff and I'm the defendant in a series of lawsuits that have lasted since 1993 regarding land use. And I'll be very brief about what this court case is about, but it's very important to what you're dealing with. I bought a farm, and the very next day I was told it was being condemned. I was told that the land was illegally divided, that there were illegal structures on the property. It had this whole series of land use issues. Before we bought the farm, we hired an attorney. who investigated the farm very thoroughly at the planning department and at the state level. My family is also very knowledgeable people in land use. We've been here in the state before land use came in. So we were no amateurs at this, but nonetheless, we were confronted with this issue. We sued the sellers of the property. The lower court ruled that we had no right to sue them under disclosure statement or our standardized real estate contract. So that was taken to the Court of Appeals. The court reversed the ruling, saying that they saw a contract, and in that contract, this is what happens. The other side of the courtroom, the defendants, basically said, we can string barbed wire around anything that looks like a house and call it a house and create that under our legal system, and that's what they did. And I bought the remainder of that. So on my farm sits this little illegal home that was created simply by building a house around it and creating the legal documents to create that as what all of us would think was a home. So, and you guys are going to confront that issue when you come to Measure 37, because there's a lot of people in the state that would like to do just that. So we're going to go back to court. They've sent us back to the lower court, and we will almost certainly lose that case. And when we do, it is going to lay out the groundwork and the picture it takes for any first-year guy out of law school and a client to simply create home sites. And that's about to happen in the next 2 months. So I'm going to leave this short. Do you guys have any questions about what's taking place here? Do you guys understand that disclosure statements and real estate contracts aren't recognized by the court? Any of you have any background in that?
This committee just found out about illegal lots this earlier this week,
yeah,
and how they can entangle very good, unsuspecting people.
Yes, so I'm one of them.
I think we probably believe what you're saying.
Sure. And this is all of record. You can go to the Court of Appeals and look at these, what I'm discussing, or to the lower court. And so I think what I'm warning you about here is that, you know, we've listened to a lot of discussion here about Measure 37. What I'm talking about is the nuts and bolts of a person in the future walking into a planning department or into a courtroom and it all being very clear. You know, if a property has a Measure 37 claim, this has got to be laid out in no uncertain terms so that it proceeds in an orderly, organized fashion that's legal and properly done so everyone's protected. If you don't do that, you're going to end up where I am, where I live in the most high-value farmland in this county with this hellish mess. Legally. And for all our effort, and we've spent a huge amount of money and time, we've not been able to resolve this issue.
Senator Whitsitt has a question.
Sure.
Thank you, Chair Gerard. Can you give us a cite on that that appeals case?
You know, I can give you the date. You can go to the website.
Names.
The name is Archambault. And it's Ogier, O-G-I-E-R. And you'll find it in August of last year.
Thank you.
Sure. Any other questions?
Hang on. That's
sure.
My job.
Okay.
Mr. Martin?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, and staff. Once again, thank you for coming to Medford, Oregon. Measure 37, I've heard a lot of people about ranches and cattle and whatever. I grew up with horses. I've lived here about 30 years. Measure 37 is like horses kicking at the traces. You know, their cinch was too tight. Everything was pushing on them a little bit too much, and everybody got a little fed up with it. Several people have talked about land use laws in Oregon being painted with a broad brush, particularly as it relates to land designations, and that's extremely true in Jackson County. There are lands here that are just foolishly called EFU, and then there are lands that are EFU that are being built upon every day. I think that not many of us would argue that some of the best soil is located right around the fringes of all the little cities that were built along the Rogue River and Bear Creek. So perhaps there is some room for doing a little bit of nudging and working on it to start to protect some of those high-value lands, but you need to loosen the cinch let up on the reins, take the spurs out of the flanks of the people that you're saddled on here, and give them a little bit of room. Because if you don't, there'll be another measure coming up through the ranks, and it'll make this one look like a train wreck. Anyway, I just want to give you a quick story. I have clients that bought land in 1960 and fairly good sized acreage here that's right on the urban growth boundary of Medford. And they have a trucking company. They were involved in the log trucking business, and they built their business up over years to over 100 log trucks. And, of course, as the lumber industry went down, they were quite smart, and they switched, and they became long-haul trucking company. They have neighbors that have additional land, which is, once again, zoned EFU. It is not EFU land. It's alkaline. Three different orchardists have attempted to farm this land and whatever, and they found it was so alkaline that it was useless. It was it has soils that are clay, black, sticky, 1 to 2 feet deep, and limestone right underneath it. So it sits in this so-called buffer between Medford and whatever. And this company has been so successful in their running their business and taking the hit from lumber to going to long-haul trucking that they would like to add 275 trucks to their fleet. And so we've made a Measure 37 claim to allow that company to expand from the little tiny spot of begrudging commercial land that they were allowed to operate their business on, which they can't even park all their trucks on right now, to expand that operation to add about 300 jobs to the valley. The additional portions of their land, coupled with neighbors and whatever on that area, they have proposed that it be brought into the city and in the urban reserve as a complete master plan to provide affordable housing. And I'm just trying to make this fast forward, so this is going to go quick. If this is the city limits, and this is a simple measure of economics, and this could be one of the big problems of this land use system, and you put a boundary around it, there are lands that are in that boundary and there are lands out. And instantaneously upon creating that boundary, these lands have a value and these have a different value. And what has happened here is that those lands have been banked by large developers, and I don't blame them. They're using the system. They've figured it out. They've banked it. And they have homes now. Raw land costs for development per lot is in the $40,000, $45,000 range in Medford. Medford, Oregon, for instance, has a, I think the median family income here is about $38,800. In Portland, it's a little over $52,000. And yet the median price of a home in Medford is about $20,000 more than in Portland. And this trend is continuing. We have a very slow, roughly 2% growth in the median income, and last year we had a 20.9% growth in the cost of a house. All these are created by a system that is a little bit out of control. It is unintended consequences of good thinking. I mean, I'm a planning student from California Polytechnic. I understand the principles of good land use planning and proper use of the services and infrastructure of a city. But what we have done is we've got this very complicated system that we've tried to paint with a broad brush. And then we go into bringing land in. I brought this little chart here. This is the...
Can you expedite just a little bit, sir?
Sorry?
Can you begin to wrap up?
Yeah, I'm trying to. This is a little chart of just how urban lands are evaluated, and each one of these represents a committee and summarized. And so what's happened is the pressure on lands to develop them has just become unbearable here. The prices have gone through the roof. Measure 37 is a little relief on that. Fix it up a bit, but don't mess with it. There's a sentiment here that it's something that you really need to just clean up, but leave it alone. If you don't, I think that the whole thing's going to get worse. There are ways to fix it. I agree there are problems, and particularly when it comes to farmland and high-value farmland. But for the rest of it, there needs to be some relief, both for cost of property and availability of it. And the perception that that these urban growth boundaries place on the cost of land.
Thank you very much. We'll dismiss this panel, bring our last three forward. Brent Thompson. And I'm not sure whether it's Karen Leet, and Tanya Graham.
Brent Thompson had to leave. He left. statement, which I would like to put into the record.
Please.
Is there anybody else?
You could be our finale.
I guess I'm all three.
You're it.
And who are you?
My name is Tanya Graham. I live at 418 Litt Way in Ashland, and I am not a realtor. I am the executive director of Headwaters, and we are a community-based conservation organization that works here in Southern Oregon to protect forest ecosystems and clean water. And I'm here tonight because Oregon is an amazing place to be. There is a quality of Oregon that people come from all around the country to experience, and that is that we have really good people, we have an amazing landscape, and there is a vision in this state for what kind of a community and what kind of a future we want to give to our children. And that's what I want to talk with you very briefly about tonight, is the vision of what we want Oregon to be 100 years from now. Oregonians are very fair-minded people, and I believe that we voted for this measure primarily because we saw that there had been some people who were not being treated in a just and fair way. Now, that is a radically different notion than saying, let's blow the doors open on development and just let anybody do what they want. I believe the pendulum has swung very wide here, and as is the case in so many situations, within states and within communities, it will swing back again. And at the point where Oregonians truly understand the implications of this very broadly written piece of legislation, they're going to want to swing it back again and create more balance in it. And in that intervening time, we are dependent on our legislature to make sure that we are protecting the very best and the most ecologically significant lands and water systems in the state. So as you go through this process of potentially putting a fix on this bill, I would like you to think about what landscapes and what parts of our landscape are absolutely critical to protecting the future of Oregon's children. And make sure that whatever you do, when you look at it, when you look at the very final bill that you create, I would like to encourage you to match it up against what your grandchildren might think of it when they're in their 40s and 50s. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Graham. Committee, that concludes testimony. We have received 28. Is there anyone else who wishes to speak?
Representatives, and it made me late. I didn't get to sign up.
We will blame Representative Greenlick for that.
Well, I need to point out Representative Anderson also.
Please come forward.
Senator Whitson had a question.
And to the folks up there from Bly, we apologize. If we'd known you'd come all that way, you'd have been first ones on the list. So.
Bob, come a long ways. Lyle Woodcock. I live in the Applegate. I'm in Josephine County. And I apologize for not signing up, but I did come in late when I got here. I've had a kind of an interesting 4 months. My wife has got cancer. I had her in the ER yesterday. I called after the meeting there to see if she was all right, if I could come over here. And so it's kind of put me in a burden, but we'll get by. Now, I'd like to go back, way back.
How far back, sir?
To the Constitution, because my great-great-great-great-great-grandfather was James Wilson, and he's one of the six people that signed all the documents. You can check that. Now, Benjamin Franklin was a personal friend of his, and Benjamin Franklin said, this is a republic, a land of law. We've been here over 100 years, 150 years. I was born next to the Burgee farm in Rogue River. What does our Constitution say about calm? You fellas took your oath of office to uphold the Constitution of the United States. The Constitution says, you take, you pay. I'd like to see you honor that. On Measure 7 and 37, there was two votes from the people. We passed them both, and our judges have done what they have done. Interesting thing in grapes and apples. Grapes, a year or two ago, hung on the vines here and rotted. Because there was such an expansion of grapes, they overproduced. You've seen it about 5 miles north of Salem on the old 99 East. Remember that trellised up nice apple orchard that was in there on the left-hand side? And they hung there and rotted. They didn't have a market. I seen it clear down at Stockton, California. Yet they hung and rotted. They could get $40 a bin, and it costs $45 a bin to pick them. They rotted. Farmers can't stand that. I just wanted to bring that to your attention. This is America. This is not India. In India, they have the caste system. If you're a beggar, you stay a beggar. We've enjoyed the land of the free. Please don't discriminate against me with my, because I'm on land, it's farmland. If I could get a decent price, and I've argued through the Farm Bureau and every place else, we have got to have a profit. But we're being clubbed with laws, no profit. Our auctions, livestock auction is gone. Our machinery is gone. I'm sending clear to Tennessee to get parts. It's gone. Please, the old Hyde farm was a century farm. It joins mine. I was on Channel 10 about 20, 30 years ago, and I said, if you don't change this, the Hyde farm will be gone. And it was foreclosed on it. It's gone. It's raising the most beautiful fire hazard bunch of weeds you've ever seen. I'm scared to death of getting burned out by it.
Sir, I'm going to have to ask you to begin to wrap things up.
Oh, kiddo. I'm just about done anyway. I just wanted to... We've got a great country. We got a constitution. I still believe in it. I still believe that's number one. Without our Constitution and our private property, we're going no place. Thank you. Any questions?
Thank you very much. Committee, that concludes accepting testimony on Measure 37. We have heard the testimony tonight of 29 residences of Klamath and Lake counties. Job well done. We thank Medford for inviting us. We thank Medford for participating and Klamath. So, and committee, thank you for being here. Seeing no further business before the committee on land use, we are adjourned.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.